Welcome to the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast with your host, Steve Abramowitz, Managing Director of Mill Creek Financial Partners.
Hello, and welcome to the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast, where we're surviving some electrical storms at the moment, but I am live from Sheraton Wild Horse Hotel in Phoenix, Arizona, safe and sound. And thank you to Ameriprise for putting me up. No matter, nothing can keep me away from you, dear listeners. And I have another great guest for you, as always, focused on the volunteer state and our nation today, with always an interesting person making a positive change in our community. This time, special guest Joshua Ulbrich, manager of the Station Inn. But first, for more information about the Mill Creek View podcast, visit us on Amazon Music or Spotify at Mill Creek View Tennessee Podcast. And don't forget to subscribe to the show so you won't miss a single episode. And thank you for listening. Welcome to our People in the News episode, where I interview people who are making an impact and are lovers of truth. Today, we are talking with Joshua Ulbrich of Nashville's legendary Station Inn. The Station Inn is a music listening room in the Gulch area of Nashville, founded in 1974 by a group of six pickers and singers who wanted a great place in Nashville to get together. Red Smith, Bird Lee Smith, Jim Bornstein, Bob Fowler, Charmaine Lanham, and Marty Lanham, along with Bob Fowler's wife, Ingrid Fowler, Roland White has been part of that original Station Inn family from its beginning. He was instrumental in making it a success and has been a great ambassador over the years. It was originally located near Centennial Park and Vanderbilt University. The owners themselves were the house band, providing entertainment on a regular basis with drop-ins always welcome. The Station Inn has brought great bluegrass roots and Americana music to millions of fans across the globe. Many of the world's most successful musicians have played at the Station Inn, including Bill Monroe, JT Gray, Alan Jackson, Dierks Bentley, Vince Gill, Alison Krauss, and John Prine. The venue has been around for a long time and plans to be around for many generations with a goal to bring great music and great fun to Nashville and the rest of the world. JT Gray would frequently sit in with them. It was originally a coffee shop style setting near Centennial Park. Like I said, in 1981, JT bought the club and moved it to its current location at 402 12th Avenue South in the Gulch. Back then, the Gulch was one of the more dangerous areas of the city, but it didn't stop anyone from coming out. In 2003, JT Gray Station Inn received the Distinguished Achievement Award from the International Bluegrass Music Association for his contribution to the furtherance of bluegrass music. JT Gray is credited with doing more than any one person in Nashville to preserve the legacy of bluegrass left by Bill Monroe and others. Today, the Station Inn has become internationally known as the place to go in Nashville to hear bluegrass and roots music. 26 years later, JT's plan still works just as well as it did in the early days. Over the years, he has given many new and promising bluegrass and roots music performers an opportunity to showcase their talents. Alison Krauss played the Station Inn several times during the late 1980s and went on to become one of the hottest young stars in the bluegrass and country music business. The roster of names past and present performing at the Station Inn reads like a who's who of bluegrass and roots music. The top names in bluegrass, roots music, country music, and rock still perform, as well as drop in at times to relax, enjoy the music, and sometimes sit in with the evening's band. Hello, Mr. Ulbrich. How are you today?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for asking. I'm avoiding the storm. Glad you are too, or doing
yeah,
the best.
It's rolling through here, but I do appreciate you having me on here.
Great. Are you any relation to the Metallica drummer Lars Ulrich?
No, absolutely none.
Good. Because if you ever see the documentary, Some Kind of Monster, he's some kind of a-hole. I don't know. Maybe he's a super sweet guy. He's invited on anytime. Anyway. Good. So after the club's four-decade proprietor and Bluegrass Hall of Famer JT Gray died suddenly in late March 2021 at the age of 75 and without a will, leaving a void at the beloved venue there, you took over. How did you get so lucky to be running the business?
Well, I started 20 years ago when I moved to Nashville. I had one of the first venues that I visited was the Station Inn. I didn't know, but just a few people in town, but I had inquired about where the bluegrass was in town, and it didn't take very long for people to guide me to the Station Inn. They said, if for bluegrass in Nashville, that's where you need to be going. And right. So obviously I went to, I found my way down there into the Gulch area and kind of wondered why I had ventured into that area, but it was very evident why bluegrass was very much alive in that area. And so I struck up a friendship with JT that lasted this full 20 years.
Has the family said how JT died publicly? Was it COVID?
It was listed as COVID, but JT had a lot of underlying conditions. Some things that were not even made aware to his family. JT was very private, and he wanted the focus to be on the station end rather than himself and his health.
And the passing of Gray and his longtime landlord and friend, Charles, is it Weeby, within a few weeks
yep.
of each other, that definitely raised questions and concerns about whether the venue would continue on. I mean, it was a handshake between those two, but yes. It seems like it has definitely survived. You are the new management and
I'm the new owner.
Yep, new owner. And with the land underneath the old stone building, it could be some of the most valuable in the town of Nashville, a fast-growing city. Are developers calling you all the time?
They don't call me directly. Every now and then one will stop in and inquire about the actual ownership of the property. But I think it's been made very apparent to developers by the Webby family what their intention is, and that is for the station inn to stay where it's at. The focus is not on the money. Obviously, they could have sold at any given point over the last 10 years, which has really seen the majority of the development in that area, and they're really in tune with what's important.
That's good. That's great to hear. The first night on my first day in Nashville, I went to the Station Inn. So it's glad that it's there, and I'm glad it's going to be there. Now, you were the house dobro, which is a Gibson resonator guitar, and you played 20 years with your friend, the Grays, right? Were you the obvious choice to take over?
Well, I don't know about obvious. Over the course of those 20 years, people joked off and on and said, because I was so close to JT inside the business and outside, we had a great friendship. They said, oh, this will obviously be yours someday. And I never really thought much about that, but must have been something to it, because here we are.
And did you always play the resonator guitar? Is that how you landed
I
there?
Yeah, I played. Well, I started playing dobro a little bit before I moved to Nashville, but my main focus was on banjo. And then when I moved to Nashville, it was very apparent that there were 8 and 9 year old kids that could play the banjo a lot better than me. So that's just the Nashville way. So I focused more on dobro, because at that time there really were not a lot of dobro players in town. Which that has changed.
So most people probably don't know a lot of dobro players, but they might know country star Vince Gill. And he said about this place, it didn't matter what night you came, you knew you were going to see something great. You were going to see something musical and something that would feed your soul. And I just enjoyed every trip down here for the last 40 years, Gill said. And I'm just grateful that with a little grace and good luck, it's not going to become a big hotel or something. It's going to stay what we need it to be, a beautiful home for bluegrass music. Is that still the plan, to keep it on track?
It is the plan. Nothing has changed there. I can't foresee any reason that would come up that would change my mind on that. Through this last 2 years and JT's passing and then me taking over, the obvious question is, well, what are you going to change? And in every sense of the word, I want it to stay exactly the same. To change it would be changing what JT wanted, and that's just not what we're going for.
Oh, fantastic. Let's see, 7-time Grammy Award winner and bluegrass legend Doyle Lawson retired after 6 decades on the road at the inn last year. What was that evening like?
That was an incredible evening. It was bittersweet. We obviously wanted and appreciated Doyle being there, but knowing that that would be the end of his musical career as far as a touring bluegrass musician, it was sad. It was a night of a lot of ups and downs, but Doyle delivered a performance that only he can, and we were so honored to have him there for that.
Did he play mostly with you guys as the house band, or was there some celebrities that attended as well?
No, he actually brought his band. He brought Quicksilver with him, and a few celebrities did get up. Vince got up with him during the course of the evening. But it was a regular Doyle Lawson and Quicksilver show.
Yeah, amazing. It seems like every week there's something new in the Gulch, but this venue has done everything in its power to hold on and will continue to do so, as you say. Do you have any priorities or any lofty visions for something to change?
I don't. My vision is always looking forward, but at the same time, I want the music, the show itself, to stay the same. Obviously, through this last 2 years, I've had to make changes to the business model itself, because it's a very expensive venture to be in the Gulch right now. And if you're not making money, it's not going to last. I have changed a lot of the business model just to be able to afford to be down there, and it's worked. Unfortunately, when JT passed, the business was in pretty severe financial turmoil, and I made a lot of decisions early on. I said, I don't want the debt and the overhead hanging over me as a kind of a virus that I have to constantly combat. And I made it possible to where I paid off the debt within the very first year.
Oh, that's fantastic. How did you do that?
Well, I've made good investments over the years.
Good.
I used a lot of my own money to do that, but just
oh, there's that electric storm causing us a little bit of problems there. So, there you go. You're back.
Okay. So just tweaking things that were already in place. The old adage that it's not what you make, it's what you save. We really looked at that, and it helped significantly.
One of your, I don't know if you'd call him a coworker or a co-musicianist, said there's a big generational shift happening. Musician Mike Bubb said, what makes Station Inn great 30 years ago is what makes it great 30 years from now. If we can keep hold onto this little corner of gravel here as everything encroaches around us. I noticed things croaching all around you. There's a W Hotel across the street. There's a guitar store that's kind of shuttered. Like, what do you see that he means by a lot of encroachment since it's your neighborhood?
Well, obviously the Gulch, even when I moved there 20 years ago, you could look pretty much in a 360 degree radius, and there was nothing. There was the Station Inn, and then the big buildings came in, and it brought about a younger generation visits the Gulch area now, where back then it was the locals that kind of knew how to navigate that area. It was dangerous. It can still be dangerous, but it is definitely shifted.
Yeah, there's an American Eagle Outfitter there. There's every kind of fancy Starbucks and ice cream.
Very trendy. We have some great businesses in that area that have brought a kind of a renewal and revived the nightlife in that area, even daytime, really.
Yeah, walking distance on a sunny day.
Yeah.
It's a great place to shop, great place to dine. You can actually bring your kids down there now.
Oh, absolutely.
So let me quote you on something you wrote. It said, you said, "I don't want anything to change. 30 years from now, I don't want to see anything different in here. How performances are run to the popcorn on the floor," said manager Joshua Ulbrich. "In this transition, I realized business practices have to keep up with the times so that we get to keep our corner here. But as far as Station Inn, I hope it stays the way JT started it and kept it." But one thing did change after COVID. Jeff Brown, the Station Inn's marketing manager, has been spearheading the venue's lifeline, like Station Inn TV streaming service. How has that been going?
Well, we discontinued the Station Inn TV in July of, July of 2021. And that was a decision that was made. It really was not generating the revenue that had been portrayed to JT. It was very expensive to do. The viewership and subscriptions did not, they were just not pulling in the revenue that it needed to keep it functional. The licensing, all of that was extremely expensive.
Ah. That's too bad, because that was nice for a short amount of time, I guess, but it
was,
it does seem like a way to bring some people who can't make it downtown into the,
sure,
into the stage. But are you, any plans of ever doing that again, or was that a experiment that didn't work out?
I wouldn't say it's out of the question. To find a cost effective way to do it is going to be the task. And we do visit it every now and then and talk to different people and different streaming platforms. But it just hasn't been the focus right now. We've had other things that have taken priority, obviously, just keeping the business alive.
Yep. That's a priority. Got to do that or else it doesn't make any sense. Right. Jeff also said, he quashed rumors that were circulating on the internet that there's unspecified forces working against the club's long-term survival. Who would those forces be, and have they ramped up or slinked away?
I can't really speak to what he had said there. I don't know of anything other than if maybe he was alluding to the growth in the Gulch. I really don't know.
Okay.
I didn't work with Jeff very long. So
gotcha.
I'm not really sure.
Well, that's good, because if you did know and they were coming after you, that would be one more stress you don't need. So it's good that they're gone.
Right.
Of course, anyone who's having a conversation about something like the Station Inn has to ask this question. So forgive me. What used to be under the floor when there was an inn at the Station Inn?
The basement area has been rumored for years, and I think it's a pretty good chance. Credible. It's a credible rumor. It was a brothel.
It was a brothel. Oh,
yeah.
Is there a something that I don't know about? Was there a military establishment nearby, or it certainly wasn't sailors coming into town? Just country music lovers?
No. I think so. From the club's existence up into, I believe, probably into the late 60s, it was a jazz club. They always rumored that it was a jazz club up top, and then a different type of business down below.
Awesome. Well, no longer. Sorry, fans. You can't.
We hope not.
But still, on Sunday nights, Station Inn hosts a famous bluegrass jam, which attracts the best musicians in Nashville. There are no microphones for this jam, and anyone can bring an instrument, no matter their age or skill level, and play along with some of the best musicians around. That's still a thing, right?
That is still a thing. In fact, it's the best thing. That's literally our biggest night every week. The line generally starts anywhere from 5:30 to 6, and people are lined up around the corner to get in. It's my favorite part of the week, honestly.
Nice. And you still sit in with them?
Every now and then. Right. I don't want to be such a part of the jam that I'm taking up a spot for somebody that's in from out of town. But we generally, a little house band of us gets the jam going and kind of gets it on its feet every Sunday night. And then anybody and everybody is welcome.
Have any big names been there within the last year or two that
shocked
people?
Never know. Yeah, you never know who's gonna come into the jam specifically. It kind of fluctuates on any other given night. You literally never know who's gonna come in.
Could an out-of-towner sit down, and the next thing you know, you've got some of the biggest acts in town, like a Jason Aldean or Carrie Underwood's coming up there, or would it be more like bluesgrass traditional folks that they
more traditional, but through the course of the last year, we've had Dierks Bentley in there, Miranda Lambert's popped in, Dennis Quaid will come in and sit in with the band every now and then that's on stage.
Everybody's all American.
You just never know who's going to show up.
Very cool. So you don't book them. They just show up and jump up on stage with their own music. Nice.
That's correct.
Well, what were some of the best album release parties that you can remember there?
Album release parties. Oh, gosh. One of my favorites that just recently happened was Jason Carter. Fiddle player at the Del McCurry Band, he released his own album, and that was a huge time. Jason really brought it to the table that night with his band, his talent.
Awesome. Let's see. I wrote down here, bluegrass music aficionados and first-time bluegrass listeners will not be disappointed when they walk through that red door and breathe in that history. The Station Inn is something to be remembered. I know I sure did the first time I visited Nashville, like I said, on a house buying trip. Alicia Nugent, no relation to Ted, right?
Right.
That's who she was there. And normally I am wearing my shirt, but didn't pack it here for Arizona. What are some of the fondest memories you have before you were the owner, when you could relax a little more and just play music?
Oh, man. There are literally too many to name over the course of those 20 years. Gosh, I've seen everybody from Alan Jackson. Alan Jackson came in and done a full night where he cut some original bluegrass songs in there. That was an incredibly memorable night. But you know, back when I played with JT, I've still got video early on of one night of getting to play. It was the JT Gray Band, and Vassar Clements came in, and Vassar and Roland White set in with the band that night. And that was something I will never forget.
Vassar Clements was a big songwriter too, wasn't he?
He did write songs.
Yeah. So when that happens, do they usually fill the place with their own entourage, or they just come solo and it all just spontaneously happens? How produced is something like that?
Generally, there is no production behind it. They just slip in, and very unannounced, no entourage, nothing like that, which I think adds to the charm of it, really.
Mm-hmm. So if you had the list of like the Ryman, the Grand Ole Opry, maybe even before it moved to its big headquarters, the Station Inn, what would you say that you love the most about your spot?
The thing I like about it, it's very family oriented, and it's very up close and personal, whether it's Doyle Lawson on stage or Vince Gill or Dierks Bentley, whoever. Just whoever it is, you have a one-on-one experience. You can get so close to the artist, and in many, many other venues, it's not feasible. But you are literally right there. There's a connection. It seems to be what people really enjoy about the place. You're a part of the show. You're a part of the music, and most importantly, a part of our family.
Yeah, you walk in, you're standing outside on the street, basically, with a stone building that you have no idea what's inside, like a bunker. You go in through the red door, you see all the posters, you see all the shirts for sale, you see the stage, and you think, oh my gosh, what is this? And then all the picnic tables, and then there's the popcorn and the hot dogs, and the folks who have been working behind the counter probably 5, 10, 15, 20, 25 years. And then the crowd starts filtering in, and everybody is elbow to elbow sitting down at the picnic tables, and the music starts, and you're just transported to probably a 1965 a venue that you can't find anywhere else. Fillmore East and West, no way. CBGB's, no way. I mean, this is a one of a kind place that you happen to now be the owner operator of. What would you want to explain to somebody who can't see it with their own eyes and experience it anytime soon to know that they would get when they get there?
What I portray or tell people, anybody that calls, obviously the first question is, can we bring kids? Yes, we can. You can bring your entire family, which is one of the main reasons JT, and I adhere to this, he didn't want liquor served in the venue. It would change the framework of our audience. Families, kids wouldn't be allowed in past a certain hour. But what I promote above anything is the wholesome atmosphere. When you come in the Station Inn, it is about music. You leave your politics, your religion, you leave all of those things at the door, and it is simply about a wholesome environment that encompasses bluegrass and country music.
Great, and long may it last. Well, Joshua, thank you for your time. I really appreciate it. We're nearing the end here. Please tell our listeners where they can go to find out more about Station Inn's calendar of events, Bluegrass Online, and follow you.
Sure. We are at www.stationin.com on the World Wide Web. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Station Inn 1974. And as always, if you need more information, feel free to call the Station Inn during business hours at 615-255-3307.
Excellent. All right. Well, I can't wait to go back. Thank you for your time today. Break a leg tonight, and I
You
hope the
bet.
next 30 years are just as strong for the inn. I'll be 81, but hey, I'll come in. And really great time speaking to you. Thanks for your time.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for having us.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This pawn shop ticket for this week's rent. Well, last week's check.
Welcome to the Steve
There's
and Steve segment of
already
our show,
spent.
where we cover what we just heard and anything else on my mind. First off, Steve, how's the air quality with the smoke? I hear it's the worst in the world.
Well, we're actually have had nothing but rain for the last 4 days, so we are now it's all clear, and it's dropped from, let's say, yesterday was Monday. The week before was 80 to up to late, early, high 70s, 80 degrees. This week it's down to 50. So, welcome to the Northwest. You miss those days, don't you?
I do. And so, what did you think of our guest, Joshua
Josh is
Obrick?
great, and if I ever come to visit you in Nashville, you're taking me over there as a treat to go see those great musicians and artists. And in all honesty, I'm not a big, I don't, there's so many genres of music. I don't follow bluegrass or something, but occasionally I'll just pop on something on YouTube, and the next thing you know, an hour goes by and I'm like, those guys are phenomenal. It's a whole breed of musicianship that only comes out of America, and it's only when you sit there in a live setting and watch these guys and gals play together, the magic happens, and you are transported back 100 years or longer, and you just, I want this guy to succeed and keep that place going.
Exactly. Music Row, which is famous here, is almost all gone and gentrified. And, you know, where we are and where you are in Seattle, places like the Crocodile are all gentrified. And, you know, there's just a loss of this stripped down music, American traditional only, and the station inn still has that. So I was thrilled to have him on here. Changing the subject now, there is an election coming up here pretty soon. This is one of the last shows we'll have before that, but I wanted to play a couple of clips just to get in the mood of the conversation. Do me a favor and play clip one.
Black History Month, you find
ridiculous.
Why?
You're going to relegate my history to a month?
Oh, come on.
What do you do with yours? Which month is White History Month?
Well,
come on, tell me.
Well, I'm Jewish.
Okay. Which month is Jewish History Month?
There isn't one.
Oh. Oh. Why not?
Yeah.
You want one?
No.
No. I don't either. I don't want a Black History Month. Black history is American history.
How are we going to get rid of racism?
Stop talking about it. I'm going to stop calling you a white man. And I'm going to ask you to stop calling me a black man.
That's
now,
it.
Now, for you youngins out there, that was the actor Morgan Freeman talking on 60 Minutes to Mike Wallace. What do you think of that, Steve? Could we just stop talking about race and make racism go away?
Seems to me that prior to Obama, that had pretty much been the case. And when Obama came in there, there was something about change, and what he did is he went back to the Rules for Radicals playbook, and he brought it back up and he started making it front and foremost, and it's been going ever since.
You're right, and we had quite a bit of progress, let's call it. I have a speech here in 1998 that President Bill Clinton, who I'm no fan of, but he did address a genocide of the survivors at the airport in Kigali, Rwanda. And he said, "I know that in the face of all you have endured, optimism cannot come easily to any of you. Yet I have just spoken, as I said, with several Rwandans who survived the atrocities. And just listening to them gave me reason for hope. You see countless stories of courage around you every day as you go about your business here. A man, a woman who survived and go on. Children who recovered the light in their eyes remind us that at the dawn of a new millennium, there is only one crucial division among the peoples of the earth. And believe me, after over 5 years of dealing with these problems, I know it is not the division between Hutu and Tutsi, or Serb and Croatian and Muslim in Bosnia, or Arab and Jew, or Catholic and Protestant in Ireland, or black and white. It is really the line between those who embrace the common humanity we all share and those who reject it." Now, that's a beautiful thing. 1998, I hadn't even graduated college yet. And the time since then, like you said, Obama filled in the gap. We've gone, I think, a different direction. Play clip two.
An MSNBC host makes a stunningly racist claim, arguing that Tua's recent concussion problem, you know, on the Miami Dolphins, proves the NFL is racist against black people. The only problem is Tua's not black. He's not black. Hello, you dumbass Tiffany Cross. She's the most racist person on television.
Now, Tiffany Cross happens to work for a company called MSNBC, which is owned by NBC, which has a board of directors at Comcast Universal, one of the largest entertainment or infotainment companies on the planet. And they are pretty much dedicated 24/7, 365 to what I would consider some strict racist stuff. The reason why I read that speech about the Hutu and Tutsi aftermath of the atrocity is that breakout happened because there was a targeted network in South Africa that pretty much put those folks over the edge, that turned them into the streets with machetes. What do you think MSNBC's objective is with all of this racist talk?
It's the same. I mean, I having written something about these kind of things, what we're doing is we're seeing a, it's called color, CIA has been involved with this. Other countries have been involved with this. They go into a country, they stir it up, they bring in the bad actors, and they foment division and anger towards each other when there wasn't. In order to break down that society, in order to create division and chaos, and once there's chaos, they can swoop in and be the saviors and bring in their, more like I should say, their totalitarian, their ideologies with it. And we are seeing that in spades here in America.
Well, let me tell you something. In America, we're 60% white, even if they don't like that, and only 18% black. If they're going to run elections like the one that we're going through right now, where every single issue is racism, I don't think it's going to work. I don't even think the Democrats are into what the Democratic Party is doing. If you would play the last clip, I got something to say about that, and then we'll move on.
I've been telling you all about these liberals, these Democrat liberals. Look at the LA City Council president, who is referring to a fellow council person's child, who happens to be white and Democrat, who has adopted black kid, and referencing him looking like a monkey. And then the same president of the city council, Democrat again, is talking about the LA district attorney being with the blacks. Now, this is a Democrat. This is what they say privately. This is what they do. But they want black votes. Oh, and the liberal media, they are not putting in the headlines a Democrat is saying this about black people. They don't want to do that. Why? Because they're still trying to keep black people on that plantation. I have told you all many occasions, the most dangerous element to the black community is liberals. Liberal Democrats have destroyed the black community. They don't want you living in their neighborhoods. They don't want you working around them. They don't want you in their schools. They don't want you nowhere where you can tell them what to do. They want to always be in a position to tell you what to do. That's what liberals do. That's why I told the Democratic Party, you can kiss my grits.
That was Vernon Jones, who's a congressman from Georgia. And I just wanted to point out that Georgia voters continued to hit record-breaking turnout on day 5 of early voting. As of Saturday morning, this is recorded on Tuesday, approximately 660,000 Georgia voters have cast their ballot during in-person early voting, with 140,000 showing up on Friday, October 21st. Friday's totals marks a 51% increase from day 5 of 2018 midterm early voting and is only 18% less than the total of 5 days of early voting in the 2020 presidential election. So, if they're trying to say that the white man is repressing or suppressing the black vote, they are mistaken. Georgia Democrats have criticized the state's new voting law, Senate Bill 202, the Election Integrity Act, which lawmakers passed in 2021. In August, a federal judge declined to issue a preliminary injunction against the law's line relief ban at polling places. SB 202 is empowering anti-voter vigilantes who are determined to disenfranchise Georgia voters, especially young voters and voters of color. Rep. B. Nguyen, the Democratic nominee for Secretary of State, said in a statement, I think they've got this all wrong on the left, don't you?
I think you've had a number of people on the show and on your Washington show regarding voter fraud. And what they've done is they've used racism for the last 20 years as a way to not fix the voter fraud that we've been seeing. And this is really at the crux of it. We are when people really get out in the vote, and a lot of blacks voted for Trump, by the way, the fact is they don't like the other side, the side that wants totalitarianism and to stick all sorts of stuff into our children's minds. They want voter fraud, and when people show up in mass, they can't fraud anymore, and they don't like this. So ultimately, I think it's just racism. Steve, I'm 63 and have never really, quite frankly, had any issue with anybody. And I just treat people as good people and bad people, and the bad people I pray for and the good people I can hang out with. That's about all I look at it as.
You and I both, brother. Well, I'll tell you this. If the far left is going to stick with late-term abortion, chemical castration, hysterectomies on minors, gay marriage, trans rights, they're going to be extinct within 10 to 20 years.
Stay
tuned for my thought of the week.
I don't
Welcome to our Thought of the Week. But before I share, I want to remind everyone to subscribe to Mill Creek View Podcast. Just go to iTunes, Spotify, or anywhere really now, and hit the subscribe button. Thanks for doing it. If I were not a physicist, I would probably be a musician. I often think in music. I live my daydreams in music. I see my life in terms of music. Albert Einstein. If I had my life to live over again, I would have made a rule to read some poetry and listen to some music at least once every week. Charles Darwin. Live music is the most primal form of energy release you can share with other people besides having sex or taking drugs. Kurt Cobain. Don't do drugs, kids. Well, that's it for this episode. Really hope you liked it. Write to me at millcreekview@yahoo.com and I just might read it on the air. Thank you, Josh Ulbricht. Until next time, this is your host, Steve Abramowitz, Managing Director of Mill Creek Financial Partners. Peace in our time.
Children and the pumpkins at the county fair. They were looking for America.